Welcome to Cases and Controversies, a Supreme Court podcast by Bloomberg Law. I'm Kimberly Robinson.
And I'm Lydia Wheeler. So, a historic day at the court with arguments in former President Donald Trump's appeal to remain on the 2024 ballot for Colorado's Republican primary, which is on March 5th. The Colorado Supreme Court, just to remind you, said that he was ineligible from holding office under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment because of his actions that led to the January 6th attack on the U.S. Capitol. The provision bars anyone who took an oath to support the Constitution from holding office if they engaged in an insurrection.
Yeah, Lydia, there were a whole bunch of very technical arguments surrounding this case. I mean, I think Trump had briefed 5 separate arguments. They really got into the weeds in a lot of places. I was looking at Twitter after arguments, and I noticed that former acting Solicitor General Neal Katyal had said that the arguments were, quote, technical gobbledygook. So, I think today we might sort of skip over the technical gobbledygook and sort of just talk about them at a higher level.
Yeah, a little bit higher level, but we have to get in a little bit to the Griffin's case since
we have to.
Kavanaugh was pretty keyed in on that, but more on that in a little bit. So since you were there live in person, let's talk about the elephant who wasn't in the courtroom.
Yeah. So, we talked on this podcast about the possibility of former President Trump himself showing up at arguments and sort of, what that might entail security-wise. We got word, though, before the arguments that he was not planning on coming, and he was, in fact, not there. But one person who was in the courtroom, of course, was Justice Thomas. He had faced several, not formal calls to recuse, but sort of public appeals for him to recuse from the case, in large part due to the fact that his wife, Ginny Thomas, had attended the Trump speech on January 6th. So, he was there.
Going back to who wasn't there, if Trump had been, it would have been really unprecedented. I dug around a little on the history earlier in the week in preparation, and no one that I talked to could point to a time when a former president has sat in on a case that they were directly involved in. But fun fact here for all you Supreme Court history nerds out there, Grover Cleveland and Benjamin Harrison both argued cases before the court after they were president, and they did so, get this, in front of justices they themselves had appointed.
My gosh, Lydia, I just had this vision of Donald Trump arguing, stepping up to the lectern, Mr. Chief Justice, and maybe that would be fabulous.
So from my end, listening remotely from my office, it sounded like there's no question that Donald Trump is going to win this one. I don't know if it's going to be a 9-0 slam dunk for him, but Kimberly, what did you think?
Yeah, that certainly seems to be the direction that the court was going today. I mean, to back up, I think that was sort of the instinct when the justices agreed to hear this case, in part because Donald Trump only has to win on one of those 1,000 technical gobbledygook arguments that
there's 5, but yes, it felt like thousands.
So, he just has to win on one of those, whereas, the voters who are seeking to exclude him from the ballot have to make a clean sweep of all of the arguments. If they lose on one, then Trump wins. So I think, from the beginning, it was sort of an instinct that that's the way that the Supreme Court was going to go, particularly if they were going to try to come up with something that was, as close to unanimous as they could. Bringing along the 6 conservative justices just always seemed harder to me than bringing along the 3 liberal justices. But with that said, I think the one question I still have after oral arguments is where Justice Sotomayor is going to land. She had some questions that were very critical of Trump's attorney, Jonathan Mitchell.
There's a whole lot of examples of states relying on Section 3 to disqualify insurrectionists for state offices. And you're basically telling us that you want us to go 2 steps further. You want to maybe 3.
But it sort of seemed like by the end of the argument, she'd kind of seen the writing on the wall and was maybe trying to narrow what the ruling might be.
Would that be true if we were to hold more narrowly in a reversal that it's not Section 3 that's at issue, but Thornton and others, as to whether Section 3 can be enforced by states against the president?
we'll see how that shakes out. But she's really my only question mark at this point.
Yeah, I think that's right. Trump definitely found some unusual allies on the court's liberal wing. You know, Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson, for one, you know, argued forcefully that Section 3 doesn't apply to presidential elections.
So can you speak to the argument that really Section 3 was about preventing the South from rising again in the context of these sort of local elections, as opposed to focusing on the presidency?
Yeah, you know, Lydia, when I was listening to that exchange happen, I was like, am I not understanding these arguments? Because Jonathan Mitchell was kind of pushing back on her. And I was like, wait a second, am I backwards? What's wrong with me? But no, it turns out that she was arguing for Trump and he was not in that one particular instance.
She wasn't the only one, right?
Yeah, right. Justice Kagan really latched onto this idea that it would be unfair, just sort of against our common sense, to think that one state could sort of decide a presidential election for the entire country.
Where we said, in fact, states are limited in who they can take off a ballot. That was a case about minor party candidates. But the reason was that one state's decision to take a candidate off the ballot affects everybody else's rights.
It was an argument that I saw a lot of her conservative colleagues not only sort of bring up themselves, but be like, yeah, right, like Justice Kagan said, right? right? So I don't know. I think that's a potential place for them to kind of find the broad ruling. Okay, so we talked about the liberal justices. What about the conservatives? Any surprises there? Were they like, Trump's an insurrectionist?
No, surprisingly, no surprise there. No, they did not go so far as to give any suggestion that Trump is an insurrectionist. But some of them seem to really agree with Trump's attorneys here. You know, Justice Brett Kavanaugh talked a lot about the Griffin's case. You know, I mentioned that at the top of the show.
Ding, ding, ding.
make sure I understand how you're using Griffin's case again. Section 3 refers to insurrection and raises questions about who decides what processes are to be used. That's ratified in 1868. The next year, Chief Justice Chase opines that states do not have the authority.
That ruling, which was authored by Salmon Chase, said Congress has to pass legislation to enforce Section 3. And, you know, Justice Kavanaugh asked Trump's attorney, Jonathan Mitchell, if the court agrees with him on Griffin's case, if that ends this dispute. And Mitchell said it should.
And if we agree with you on Griffin's case and what you've elaborated on there, that's the end of the case, right?
It should be, yes, unless Congress decides to enact a statute.
So other than that, Kimberly, was there any other notable exchanges that, you know, we should mention here?
Yes. I want to warn listeners that this could be a trigger warning. but Justice Alito wanted us all to be ready for the apocalypse. so here's what happened. So he's picking at this argument that the voters were making that, look, we don't need to be concerned that this is going to open up a Pandora's box where, you know, people are disqualifying Biden or disqualifying just pretty much anyone. They were saying this is a historic thing that happened. This insurrection is not likely to happen again. And Justice Alito was like, I don't know why you say that.
I don't know how much we can infer from the fact that we haven't seen anything like this before and therefore conclude that we're not going to see something in the future. From the time of the impeachment of President Johnson until the impeachment of President Clinton, more than 100 years later, there were no impeachments of presidents. And in fairly short order over the last couple of decades, we've had three. So I don't know how much you can infer from that.
So I found it interesting that there was actually very little discussion about the insurrection and what qualifies as one during this argument. You know, the voter's attorney, Jason Murray, kicked off his argument saying, you know, for the first time since the War of 1812, our nation's capital came under violent assault. But nobody seemed to really pick up on that, or few people seemed to really take that thread and run with it.
Yeah. I mean, so, you know, I wrote about this before the argument that you know, labeling Donald Trump an insurrectionist or trying to figure out whether or not what happened on January 6th, whether that was an insurrection, was probably not a very attractive argument for any of the justices for, you know, several reasons, obviously the political reason. But it's also a very fact-based question. So I guess I wasn't super surprised. Of course, you know, if they're going to rule for the Colorado voters, they're going to have to say that, which is another reason I think they probably will not. But one justice at least did talk about it. That was Justice Jackson. And again, this was in an exchange with Trump's attorney, Jonathan Mitchell.
We never accepted or conceded in our opening brief that this was an insurrection. What we said in our opening brief was President Trump did not engage in any act that can plausibly be characterized as insurrection.
All right, so why would this not be an insurrection? What is your argument that it's not? Your reply brief says that it wasn't because I think you say it did not involve an organized attempt to overthrow the government.
So that's one of many reasons. But for an insurrection, there needs to be an organized, concerted effort to overthrow the government of the United States through violence. And this
riot. So the point is that a chaotic effort to overthrow the government is not an insurrection?
No, we didn't concede that it's an effort to overthrow the government either, Justice Jackson.
So, for all you listeners, not only are we going to have actual insurrections, as Justice Alito warns us, but we're also going to have some chaotic attempts to overthrow the government.
Well, Colorado's Republican primary is scheduled for March 5th. So whatever the court is going to do with this, it's got to do it pretty quick. How soon do you think we could get something?
Okay, well, I guess we could look at, you know, a lot of people have been comparing this case to Bush versus Gore. That happened the day after arguments. I don't think we're going to see it that quickly. But, you know, given sort of that there seemed to be a lot of agreement, it seems like the court could make pretty quick work of this. But I don't really have an answer for you. Well, that's going to do it for today's episode. I'm going to go home and go to bed, Lydia.
That sounds like a good plan, Kimberly.
But for all you listeners, you can always, you don't have to go to bed. You can stay up for a little while.
And log on, too.
And if you do, and you need some updates on the U.S. Supreme Court, you can always follow along with the latest Supreme Court news at news.bloomberglaw.com.
Hello, podcast listeners. If you don't already know, On the Merits, our weekly podcast devoted to legal and government news, it's a show that features the very best of Bloomberg Law and Bloomberg Government, newsrooms that boast among the largest number of credentialed journalists in D.C. When you listen to On the Merits, you'll hear about the groundbreaking developments in the courts, in Congress, and in the alphabet soup of federal agencies that run Washington and our nation. Our show is by and about legal policy nerds, and we say that lovingly. It's a nerd's eye view of what professionals in the legal and government space need to know, but you do not have to be a nerd to listen. Check out our show, On the Merits, and find new episodes wherever you get your podcasts, and you can find our archive of shows at news.bloomberglaw.com/podcasts.